Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino series. On this episode, we talk with editor, publisher, owner, and author of the book High, Confessions of a Cannabis Addict, Leonard Bushell. Originally from Philadelphia, these days he is in Los Angeles, California. He studied psychology at Naropa Institute. Amongst many other things, Leonard offers insight into the world of addiction and what it takes to enter recovery. He can talk about the miracle and beauty of sobriety and will encourage those who need it to seek it. We got into this and so much more about his life. Dig it.
Leonard Bushell here.
Hi, Leonard. It's Joe Dimino.
Hey, Joe Dimino. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, man. How are you?
Very well.
So, the sun is shining here in Kansas City. Where exactly are you located?
Los Angeles.
Well, the sun is always shining in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's not shining yet, but it takes until about 10 o'clock for the ocean mist to clear off, and then it'll be very sunny. Yeah.
Wonderful. Before we kind of dive into your life and to kind of get a background and what you do and get into that, I kind of want to first and foremost deal with the elephant in the room with COVID. And I'm wondering, how have you been over these last 2 years? How did COVID kind of reshape and change the way that you approach your life?
More carefully, more appreciatively, gratefully. It's a phenomenal era to have lived through. Finally, something historic has happened in my lifetime. Yeah, I wasn't alive for Hiroshima or Nagasaki. Vietnam was sort of just like a business deal. I didn't think that was historic, although I think it was the first war America sort of lost, I guess. The Summer of Love in San Francisco. I was alive for that. Anyway, COVID, they used to say we would all come together if we were attacked by aliens from outer space. Like, in order for humankind to come together, we needed a common threat or enemy. So I thought maybe this would do it. But obviously it hasn't. It hasn't done shit in that regard. Bringing people together. If anything,
I agree.
Tore more people apart.
You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't get sick and die.
Yeah. I think about this from an artist perspective. Along with doing interviews, I'm a visual artist and I write. There's a lot of things artistically that my brain think about. And while I talked to a lot of musicians, I was like, if musicians or artists don't get inspired during this time, they probably should look for another profession, because this is the Bob Dylan moment for all of us. I mean, not only did America specifically have a COVID pandemic, we had a race war, we've had all kinds of things that have been added to this bonfire. So it's been quite a time on planet Earth, and I think you put it very well, to live through something this magnanimous, because I know in my lifetime, I'll be 50 this year, there just hasn't been anything that's been this big, that's been a global unifier like this.
You mean like every headline in every newspaper for over a year?
Like, you don't want to look at the news anymore because you can't take it anymore, yeah.
Well, now you do, because, it was like a year and a half ago when the bodies were piling up in the hallways at the hospitals in New York.
Yeah.
That was like, we became a third world country, I think, or maybe we have been. You can't spend too much or too little time talking about the injustices in the world right now. And I'm not talking about Buffalo or Uvalde. I'm just talking about every commercial I see on television for a pharmaceutical, when at the end they list side effects may include, dot, 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 death. There's no shortage of culprits and shitheads out there. No, at least we have music and art. I was in a museum the other day with my son. That was wonderful. I'm going to see Rufus Wainwright tonight.
Oh, cool.
So maybe concerts are going to do better than ever, because people were just, tired of sitting at home without their rock and roll or jazz or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, Rufus is definitely a hard on his sleeve kind of cat. I think that will be a spectacular show. I've been a fan of his for a long time.
I've always wanted, but I never got around to it. He's playing outside at this small amphitheater tonight.
I caught Ben Folds here about a month and a half ago, and it was a pretty wonderful show to get back out and to see spectacular music live.
Yeah, I'll bet. He's on tour. I saw his name either in L.A. or New York. I was in New York a couple weeks ago. Broadway's back, and Times Square, you can't even walk in Times Square. There's so many people.
Yeah. So, you know, before I delve into what you do professionally, I want to ask you, I know that you're an editor, you're a publisher, you're the author of High Confessions of a Cannabis Addict. Tell me, in, you know, just kind of a short span here, what is it that you do? What is it that is a part of who you are?
I just made myself an espresso. So maybe I'm a barista. How do they say, a barista?
Barista.
I'm a private barista to a publisher and an editor. Oh, God. Maybe this late stage in my career is the wrong stage because I don't like answering personal questions. But that's all I do. That's all I do three times a week. So, but I'm very into jazz. I used to produce jazz videos back in New York. Back in the day, I publish a newsletter that literally, while we were talking, got sent to 23,000 subscribers, as it does every Tuesday morning at 9:05. So literally, while we've been talking, it was programmed to get sent out. So I publish and edit an incredible e-magazine called the Addiction Recovery E-Bulletin, which is, if you went to your computer, you could see today's e-bulletin on a website, which is addictionrecoveryebulletin.org. So I'm a publisher and an editor, and I started a film festival 14 years ago. So I'm the director of the Real Recovery Film Festival and Symposium. I wish I did more, but I'm so happy. You know, the pandemic was great because I luckily work at home.
Yeah.
And so it didn't curtail my work activities.
What was the first jazz album that made you see the light?
It's in my book. It was Pharoah Sanders, The Creator Has a Master Plan. There's a scene in my book where my brother and I are driving down the East River Drive in Philadelphia, and that came on. WRTI, the Temple University station, was all jazz. Luckily, somebody there had the wherewithal to turn, you know, and WXPN, which is the University of Pennsylvania's radio station, they were just as good, but very eclectic. But WRTI in Philadelphia, all jazz. And when we started listening to The Creator Has a Master Plan, we didn't know it was like 23 minutes or 19 minutes. And it just never ended. You know, I wish it had never ended. And when I lived in the Bay Area, I got to see Pharoah Sanders play and just hanging out at various jazz clubs, and he looked like he was from Egypt. So that was my, I mean, before that, I guess it's Dave Brubeck, you know, his first big album, I think. I don't know if I, and of course Miles sits atop all of them. McCoy Tyner, who I think is still alive.
Yeah.
McCoy? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's still with us. Isn't that wild? You know, and even Sonny and all of those casts, yeah, they're that what I like to affectionately call the Jazz Jedi Council.
The Jedi Council?
The Jazz Jedi, yeah, they're all up in Cloud City, and they're just looking down on all of us, trying to make a way with their wisdom.
You know, whenever I listen to Coltrane's My Favorite Things, all I really hear is McCoy Tyner's piano work.
Yeah.
To me, that's his song. Yeah, that's his. So, Dave Brubeck is still a great album.
Oh, man. It's a classic, for sure. Well, you know, how did all of this begin for you? You're obviously a very motivated individual. You've seen a lot of roads. Talk to me a little bit about where you were born and raised and kind of how you got this rhythm inside of you to do what you do.
Because my favorite things in life was sex, drugs, and music. And I would do anything for any of those. That's it. I have no really deep golden diamond sutra of a goal in life. I'm more of a hedonist than I am anything, but I'm also a pacifist. And, you know, I wasn't a hippie and I was too young to be a beat, but I sure loved the way they lived. And probably moved to San Francisco to be near that vibe. So I don't. That's probably not answering your question.
It is. It's your narrative, man. You answered it perfectly.
I don't want to demean myself. I don't want. You know, I wrote the book not to get people to like me. Because while I was writing it, I thought, oh, people aren't going to like hearing this. But I did it anyway. So I wrote it to let people get to know me. Specifically my sons. I wanted to leave something for them to know their father by, even though I never hid anything from them when they were growing up. Like my son knew I was a drug dealer. I never lied to him about that.
How many sons do you
have? Two. One and a half. I have two.
I was just going to say, what do they do for a living?
One's a genius artist who's in a nut house, and the other works at a treatment facility. My one son is 40 years old, and he has 20 years sober. When he was 19, he said, Dad, I want to go into treatment. I drove him to Betty Ford, dropped him off. Said, hey, if you don't like it after a week, call me. I'll come pick you up. He stayed for the month, and he's never gotten high or had a drink ever since. Wow. So that's like one of the great miracles in my life. That's like a gift that I don't think, you know, that I didn't deserve, but I got anyway. They're in the book. It's all covered. You know, maybe someone listening will go to Amazon and buy the book after the interview.
That
doesn't always happen. I was hoping, like, if two people bought a book after every interview, I would have sold a lot more books. And not that my goal is to sell books, but my goal is to have people read it. I just want people to read it because all the reviews are fantastic. And I put my heart and soul into it. It's just probably, I was thinking, I'm proud of this book as I am almost anything else I've done in my life. This was the hardest thing ever. And I'm just so thrilled with the way it came out.
Speaking of books and being inspired, I mean, we all are standing on the shoulders of giants. And you were mentioning the Beats, and I'm thinking about Kerouac and all those adventures. I loved that era myself, and I was nowhere near that. I'm just a Gen Xer that, you know, has been on the periphery of all these little arcs of history. What book really did you dig from that era? Is there one that you really remember that you liked and go back to?
Well, I think one of the most significant, and it's not a beat, I think one of the most significant books in many people my generation's lives was Be Here Now by Ram Dass. That sort of towers over everything. As far as the beats, you know, I love me some Kerouac novels. I liked Lou Welsh, Gregory Corso, a great poet who I got to study with live a couple summers years ago. What book turned me? It wasn't Kerouac initially. Like I said, Be Here Now towers above all. And I used to say I would never go away on a trip, even for a weekend, without a novel, a psychology book, and a poetry book. Or maybe, you know, fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. Probably Robert Bly. Let's Robert Bly. Reading Rainier Marie Rilke. That did it. Let's say Robert Bly's writing and poetry. Let's give him a shout out. Who still, I think, is popular, even though he's been dead. He only died about 3 or 4 years ago. And Allen Ginsberg can't be forgotten by any means. You know, I have my people that I rely on to try and guide me through any situation. You know, maybe not known to your audience, but known to some in your audience. Who is your audience, by the way?
It's expanding quite a bit with what I've been doing. Well, I've interviewed a lot of people over my life, but a lot of has been musicians and artists. So chances are, a lot of them will probably know what you're talking about. They're a pretty artistic group.
You know who's still alive and working? David Amram.
Oh, man. David Amram, I'm so glad you said his name, is one of the best human beings I've ever talked to on this planet. I absolutely wake up every day. He's one of, like, a handful of people that I am thankful exist on this planet.
That's nice. You know, it was actually a book he wrote, which I'm sure if you haven't read it, you can get it. It's called Vibrations. And he wrote it, it's got to be 40 years ago. And I would buy copies for all the musicians I knew, because it was like, and I'm not a musician by any means, but I know what I like. And I worked at a club in Philadelphia that David Amram was performing at. And before the show, it was a small club, he gave me a stack of his albums. And he said, here, see if you can sell some. So after the show, he was leaving, I said, hey, I sold 5 albums. And I gave him the money, and he looked at it. He said, oh, good, dinner money. And I don't know if he was that broke at the time, but he was, you know, he was supposed to take over for Leonard Bernstein and decided to follow Allen Ginsberg instead. So, no, he's a lovely, he's in his 90s. I saw him perform 2 months ago. And he was on his way to the 100th or something anniversary in Lowell, Massachusetts to celebrate Kerouac. And he stood up straight, and I thought, if I can look like that at 82, the way he looks at 92, it would be just magnificent. So I understand how for him, the summer of love never ended. I wish this was the show and we could say goodbye now.
Yeah, right. Are you kidding? Yeah. Well, speaking of that thought that you had right there, I actually got married in July of 2019, and I've been with my wife for 5 years. And after we met, first date I took her on, and it plays into your story you just said, I decided, without really knowing her that well, that I was going to go have her see Candido, the bongo player. He was 90 years old. They wheeled him out in a wheelchair. They put him in front of the bongo. All right, he's 90. That dude straightens his back up, and he attacks that instrument like he was 25. it was, I mean, that whole place, you could have heard a pin drop. You're all watching something spectacular. So when you talk about being at 90 and being able to do that, to see a cat get on the bongos and go at it was spectacular. It was quite a first day.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But, you know, David, I remember, you know, talking to someone like that, being around that aura. I did see him actually perform at a library about 3 or 4 years ago before the pandemic. And there is a magic, and you almost can't explain it to people when you get around somebody like that. But he definitely embodies a lot of magic within him, that's for sure.
Yeah, I got to, I showed him my book. I asked him if he wanted a copy because we're both from Philadelphia, so we have a little something in common, you know. And he said, yeah, and I gave him a copy of my book. And I was just, it would be a dream come true to have get a letter from him saying, oh, I read your book. I liked it. But who knows? I said, do you still read? He said, sometimes. You know, I would think at that age, there's certain things you have to give up. Because you just, you know, sort of like, who needs to learn something new at 90? But I guess that's part of growing old gracefully, is always wanting to learn something, even if you were never going to use it in your life because your life is practically over. I guess it's a good, if you're a learner, you're a learner. You don't stop because you turn 80. Or 90 even. Anyway, yeah, David Amrell, I'm glad you interviewed him and got to experience him and see him and sit in his presence even. You know, it's great that people become like that. I was just at a museum on Sunday. The Academy of a motion picture museum. They took over a department store. They made a museum. And there's a picture of Spike Lee, Chris Rock, and Prince, like from like 30 years ago.
Wow.
And you just think, what was their conversation? Spike Lee, Chris Rock, and Prince, all, you know, young black people being incredibly successful. You know, when they were starting to peak, and you just, it's a great photograph. You think, wow. And two of them are obviously, well, no, the only one's gone. Music, yeah, I produced jazz videos at the Village Vanguard long in the 80s, I think it was. Only a few.
Wow.
One of the highlights of my life, I got to hand Freddie Hubbard $3,000 cash.
Wow.
Who had owed me money from a Coke deal from 10 years before that. He was like a prick. He's a bit of a prick. You know, like sometimes famous people will get drugs from you and they think because they're famous they don't have to pay.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm Freddie Hubbard.
Yeah, right.
But he hasn't died, has he?
I don't think Freddie's with us anymore. My gut says no.
Let's get started because I have to be somewhere.
Oh, we've been going. And I could see the kind of cat you are. I really kind of wanted to get into your history. I really wanted to get, you know, kind of a tapestry of story from you to really kind of get people into wanting to get your book. And, you know,
I'm good. Can I just read you the chapter titles of my book? And you can do with it as you please.
Please do.
Because they just sort of, they fit and they work and they came to me. So I won't read them all. But the first chapter one is Grief, Like a Torn Dress, Should Be Left at Home. Chapter 3, Let's Make a Deal. Chapter 4, Fortune Will Always Come to a House with Laughter. Chapter 5, Do Everything You Can and Don't Get Caught. Chapter 7, He Who Strongly Desires to Move Up Will Think of a Way to Build a Ladder. Chapter 8, Always Make Way for Fools and Madmen, Kids and Moms. Chapter 10, Oh Mama, Can This Really Be the End? That's the chapter where my near-death experience happened. Chapter 11, Lost Weekend. Chapter 14, The Young and the Restless. Chapter 15, Temptations, My Girl, Ain't Too Proud to Beg. Chapter 16, A Lot Happens Quickly. Chapter 19, Addiction is Not a Disease, It's an Addiction. Chapter 20, Keeping It Real, Ready for My Close-Up. And the last chapter is chapter 21, Betty Ford Died Sober, I Should Be So Lucky. And if you would, on the inside flap, there's a poem by Gregory Corso. It's called How Not to Die. It says, around people, if I feel like I'm going to die, I excuse myself, telling them I got to go. Go where, they want to know. I don't answer. I just get out of there, away from them, because somehow they sense something's wrong. They never know what to do. It scares them, such suddenness. How awful to just sit there and they asking, are you okay? Can we get you something? Want to lie down? Egads, people. Who wants to die among people, especially when they can't do shit? To the movies, to the movies. That's where I hurry to when I feel like I'm going to die. So far, it's worked. And I read that years ago, and when I founded the film festival, I thought, that's perfect. Yeah, because it's, I have to go to a movie, you know, like at least every other week. Literally, you know, I have to be in a theater, not watching it on TV. It's sort of what I call my drug of choice now, is a film. And I, yes, the pandemic wasn't good for that, I admit. But luckily, you know, when I go to these spiritual ceremonies and people stand around in a circle and they hold hands and they said, what are you most grateful for during the pandemic? And I would always say, there's three things I'm most grateful for. Netflix, Amazon Prime, and HBO Now. Because I live alone, and without those, and I, you know, good, great shows, really creative, genius, miniseries, they're all miniseries. And they're fabulous. Of course, I'm grateful for my health, and I'm especially grateful for the small black dog that lives in my house for no rent. She makes it all worthwhile. But films are the greatest art form of all because they combine all the other art forms. And it's like taking an hour and a half off to have someone else's dream instead of my own. And so I'm saying, thank God for foreign films. If there weren't foreign films, I might have jumped years ago. But there are. Right now, to help promote a casual friend, Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols, he wrote a memoir, and they just made it into a 6-part miniseries on Hulu, directed by Danny Boyle. It's called The Pistols. Sort of like his dramatic take on the origin, the creation story of the Sex Pistols. Not 100% true, he says, but it's mostly true.
Yeah.
Anyway, Hulu. Yeah, the Sex Pistols. It's fun. It's a fun watch to be reminded of what London was like back in the 70s and 80s. So
for sure. So I'm not going to keep you that much longer. I have two more questions for you. And my question to you is this, it's a story and a question. I remember when the Beatles anthology came out, Paul McCartney said one of the first times he came to America, he was hanging out with Bob Dylan, and they really wanted to hang with him, and they got so stoned that at one point Paul looked at Bob and said, what is the meaning of life? And Bob wrote it down on a piece of paper. He put it in his pocket, And as the night went on, he must have either just been so stoned or forgot, but he went in to get the piece of paper and he couldn't find it. So my question to you is, if you get to that party where someone's bespeckled by you because they read your book and you write down on a piece of paper what you think the meaning of life is, what might it say?
There's a theme that runs through my book. It's I have this incredible art collection of Matisse and Van Gogh and Rodin. And it's truly a remarkable collection. And I keep it at the Norton Simon Museum in Pasadena. Because as I say, I can't afford the insurance. So when I want to visit my collection, I have to drive 20 minutes to Pasadena to see my artwork. And the theme that runs through the book is reality is what you make it. You know I don't own those pieces, but to me, they're mine. They're mine. I know where they are. They'll always be there. And I don't need $20 million pictures hanging in my living room, because I'd be afraid of getting ripped off and robbed and shot. So in my mind, I keep them at the Norton Simon Museum. And so if that's the answer to life, reality is what you make it. It's like what you see is what you get. What you see is what you get. And you can see, you know, psychologists call it reframing. You know, something bad happens, but you look at it from a different angle, it's not so bad. So maybe the answer to life is don't hurt anybody and enjoy yourself as much as possible. I think we're here to play. I think porpoises are not more evolved than we are. Or maybe they are, and all they do is play and look for food. So, yeah, be fed, try and live indoors, and have as much fun as possible without hurting anyone.
I like
it. I think you'll live a relatively happy life. My main guru, sensei, Michio Kushi, who helped bring macrobiotics to America, he said at the end of the day, he said, you know, his little check-in was, did I eat good food today? He said, did I acknowledge my ancestors for giving me this life? And the third one was, would I like to live this day over again? And if you can answer yes to all three, you're in good shape. You know, that last one, would I like to live this day over again? If nothing bad happened, I wouldn't mind living this day over again because I got to be alive. And that is a miracle that shouldn't be dismissed or taken for granted. So life itself is the gift. You know, maybe there's another one, but for now, this is all I got. And, you know, I can look at the, you know, I think it was Bob Quirk, Bob Marley, says, you know, for some people, when they get caught in the rain, they get wet. Because for other people, when they get caught in the rain, they feel the rain. So feel the rain. Don't drink soda, any kind of soda. People with brains are drinking soda. It's unbelievable. Don't forget to be kind to your neighbors if you know them.
Yeah.
Right
on, Leonard. And, hey, man. No, go ahead.
No, music. I happened to be in an AA meeting the other day, Sunday morning, and the guy was sharing. He says, I think God appears on earth as music. I think music is from the holy spheres. He says, is there anybody here who doesn't like music? Of course, no one raised their hand. Everybody, you know, you're not going to find someone who doesn't like music. If you do, run away from that person. Get away. And I came home because he's inspired me, and I listened to an early Bob Dylan song very loud. And it was magnificent. The first time I listened to a Bob Dylan album from beginning to end in at least a couple years. And I don't know whether it was his first or second album, but it was just incredible. It sounds like it was written today. In fact, they don't even sound like they were written. They sound like they just appeared. They just came. Great music. You don't even think that there's a composer behind it. It just is there. So the two recommendations, yes, The Creator Has a Master Plan by Pharoah Saunders. And my other favorite of all time is Call to a Higher Consciousness by Larry Coryell. Greatest guitar player ever. Call to a Higher Consciousness by Larry Coryell. It's like 20 minutes. There's a drum solo in the middle that you can fast forward, but it's absolutely mind-boggling, and it's 40-some years old, and it could have been played for the first time yesterday. Call to a Higher Consciousness by Larry Coryell. And I'm sure some of your jazz fans will know Larry Coryell. Left us way too soon. No, it's 20 years ago now. Anyway, Call to a Higher Consciousness. Listen to your podcast. Replay it. Turn this show on to your friends. And hi. Not hi. Hi. Confessions of a Cannabis Addict on Amazon. If you call them now, you'll probably get it delivered in like 8 or 9 minutes. They're so good now. It should have been called Confessions of a Cannabis Lover. Because nobody loves cannabis more than I do. And I think it's the greatest advancement in humankind in America is the legalization of marijuana. I hope it's legal in Kansas.
Yeah, it's medically medically legal
medically
here. So yeah.
Medically. You don't have to be sick to smoke it. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I stopped smoking it 27 years ago and I've never felt better. But I never felt better than when I was smoking it. But
yeah.
At a certain point it's like passé. It's really obsolete. It's obsolete. Anyway, I hear birds in the background. So I'm glad you got seeds in your apartment. I hope they're well fed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're lovely. There's plenty of trees around here. Leonard, man, this has been wonderful. Thank you for opening your world up a little bit. I hope that we sell at least 4 books off of this, if not more.
If not, I'm going to be back on in 6 months, okay?
I like it. We'll book it.
Okay. All right.
All right, Leonard.
Take care, man. Have a great afternoon. Have a great night.
Too,
have
man.
A great morning. Bye.
You too, man.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another famous interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, medicine, and music around the globe. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. You can watch these on the Neon Jazz YouTube channel. And for everything related to Joe Domino, go to joedomino.com. And there you can keep all of this going via Patreon or PayPal. Until next time.